harmony. I wanna tell you, since I've been gone, I ain't worried about nobody fishing in my pond, cause I'm built for control. I ain't built for speed. Oh, you know I got everything sweet, sweet, sweet mama need. Let me fly.
It's WGXC's Spring Summer 2016 Pledge Drive. Please donate and help us thrive. Find out how by visiting WGXC.org.
Relentless, our details, informal of
range, age,
WGXC's 2016 Spring Pledge Drive kicks off on June the 2nd, 2016. Help WGXC 90.7 FM raise $20,000 towards operating expenses to keep hands-on creative community radio alive and well in Greene and Columbia counties. Tune in for a full slate of remote broadcast and turnout for special events. Make a tax-deductible contribution online at WGXC.org/donate or call 518-697-7400. Your tax-deductible contribution will help sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. Thank you for supporting creative community radio in New York's Greene and Columbia counties.
The Red Dot Restaurant and Bar is proud to support WGXC, located at 321 Warren Street in Hudson, New York, a world-inspired American bistro operating for over 16 years. Visit us on Facebook or at reddotrestaurant.com. Thank you.
WGXC underwriting support is...
I hear the whisper, you won't believe it, they think
I don't hear us, though.
I don't hear us either.
I don't hear, like, in here, I don't hear anything. Headphones.
Yeah, because you're in queue. You're in queue right there.
Where I'm in, get out of.
On the Mac. There you go.
Hello, hello? No?
Nothing.
Hello? Oh, I hear Justin. I just don't hear me.
Oh.
Are we here?
I think we're here. Are we here?
Good morning, everybody.
Where are you?
Hopefully we can hear us online. This is Holly Tanner and Justin Weaver with Something to Talk About.
Yes.
Always exciting talking to all of you in whatever fashion we can get to you.
I hope they're still listening.
You were hearing, it was us that you were listening to there just briefly. There was some minor technical issues. We were listening to a show, our Veterans Day show, which was very special, but we have a special show for you today too. So hopefully you're tuned in. And as you may have noticed, if you tried to tune in on the radio, you will get nothing but a... the pledge drive information, because the radio station is in really dire straits to stay afloat, and we need your help to do that. And so if you are listening to us, you saw the Facebook message, or you've already heard, you're tuning in online. Thank God for the internet.
Yes.
Who invented that? What was his name? Who took credit for
that? I don't think it was Donald Trump.
No, it was a... I can't think of his name.
Can I say that? There's so many things I can't say.
Yeah, don't say that. 518-697-7400 or WGXC.org. Make your donation today, please, so that you can hear us on the FM radio while you're in your car or while you're doing your dishes or in your garden.
And if we don't raise the money, who knows? This whole thing, I mean, even the online part of this might just go away.
The future of the station is really dependent, and that's one of the issues with local radio such as this that isn't corporate funded, you know, that doesn't have big dollars behind it, is it depends on the listeners to support it. And so if you like what you're hearing, if you like the other programming, you know, this station has some great programming. And if you like that, you like hearing local voices, please make a donation today. Again, the number to call, it's our spring donation, even though today is the second full day of summer, but it's still the spring fun drive. 518-697-7400.
Or they can also go to www.wgxc.org/donate. I was just thinking, Holly, it might not be horrible if we have to resort to going out to the 7th Street Park with megaphones and doing our show that way. That might be interesting.
We could.
But we reach so many more people by doing it this way.
Right. We really
so
do. I hope
everybody, you know, $5. You know, there's this woman, Carol San Carlos. I told her during Hudson Pride weekend, just this past weekend, which was fabulous. We'll talk about that shortly. But Carol San Carlos, she is on a fixed income. She doesn't work anymore. She's disabled. And, you know, she was telling me during Pride weekend, I listen to your show regularly, and I contributed
$5. Very nice. And helps.
Every little bit helps.
It
if you
does.
Have a dollar, if you've got $2, if you got 50 cents, you total it up. You know, every little bit helps.
Absolutely.
So if she can do it, you can do it too.
That's right. So please dig deep in those pockets and donate. And, you know, you're also hearing some wonderful guests, such as our guest that's with us today, who, even spite of the radio's, you know, little the blip in the radar, if you will, that the station is experiencing, still decided to take time out of his very busy schedule, which I know is coming. It's crunch time because we're less than a week away from the congressional primary. But we have Will Yandick with us.
So hi, Will.
Hey, guys. Thanks. Good to be here. Thanks so much.
Yeah, we appreciate your coming in. That's awesome.
Were you just in the neighborhood or...
Well, yes, this is my hometown.
Actually, he was. So that's a good segue. And I know you've been on some other shows on the station, which is great, but we do appreciate you coming on ours as well, because we do have a different audience that listens. And now it's even really, it may be much more expanded because, you know, maybe more people have internet access. And that's actually something we can talk about, because I know it's part of your platform.
Absolutely.
Is broadband issues in Columbia County. And I don't know how it is in the rest of the district. But why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself? Because maybe the listeners don't know.
Yeah. So I was down the road because this is my home county. And I grew up here, was born in Hudson, went to Hudson High School. Great public school teachers. Justin knows them well.
Yes.
And was one of the lucky few to get scholarships to some good schools like Princeton and Brown. And that's usually where the story ends for people like me. They get good educations. We raise good families here in Columbia County. And then we often don't have the job opportunities to keep them here.
Right.
I grew up on a farm that my great-grandfather purchased in 1915 in Livingston, just about 6 miles outside of town. We celebrated our 100-year anniversary last year, and I'm a new dad for the first time. My partner, Amir, and I just welcomed a fifth generation to the farm, our brand-new son, John Abraham.
Oh, congratulations.
Wow, congrats.
That's exciting. So you're very busy.
We are. I figure we're going to do it all at once. Start a family, run for Congress.
So what made you decide to go into public service? Is that in your family history as well, or just something you felt drawn to?
It's something I felt drawn to when I really came back full-time. I've been coming back to Columbia County and upstate New York throughout my career, but really put the full-time anchor down about 6 years ago and ran for the Livingston Town Board.
Right.
And I believe I've been told I'm the third Democrat ever elected since the Whigs in the 1830s. So.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Whiz.
Which was from the 80s
or 90s.
My
math.
Not that impressive if it were the Whigs. The Whigs, very impressive.
Yes, yes, congratulations. Very impressive.
Livingston is quite the Republican stronghold town in Columbia County, and that is quite impressive. And not only did you run and win, but you were appointed the deputy supervisor.
That's right. And have a very good working relationship with my Republican board. And I think that's really the job. I mean, we live in one of the most bitterly partisan, divided Congresses that we've seen since the Civil War. And we need individuals that are able to work beyond their ideological party base to get things done. That's something that I've done at a local level, and I certainly acknowledge that I'm coming from a town of 3,600 people.
Right.
But I really think those are the skills that apply to this job. And when we look at the people that have won and kept the seat and done good things with this congressional seat, whether it's Kirsten Gillibrand or more recently Chris Gibson, these are folks that came at this job not with a lot of legislative experience,
right,
but the ability to listen to their community and get things done across the aisle.
Right.
But you've been quoted as saying that, you know, of all the things you've done in your life, this is the hardest that you've ever had to do, that you've been a part of. I'm wondering, what's the hardest part that you've found so far, in this campaign?
Yeah, and that quote comes from a farmer who is already used to doing a lot of hours of hard work. You're constantly on the road. One of the things that makes this a challenging district to run in is it's enormous. It's 11 counties. It's the second largest congressional district in New York. And it takes us 3 hours to get from one end to the other. So just to get around the district and meet voters and tell your story is challenging. The fundraising aspect is always challenging for a first-time candidate. We're very lucky that 70% of our contributions come from small-dollar amounts from folks that live right in this community, right in this congressional district. But it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to go from Livingston council member to serious congressional campaign candidate. We've done that, very proud of it.
I have to commend you for being an openly gay person running for a congressional seat. And I'm wondering, is being openly gay an asset or a liability to you, do you find?
I don't think it's either. I think one of the great things is to be able to live in 2016 and it's just not such a big deal anymore.
Right.
I mean, I think there is a generational divide, and maybe you, Justin, know what I'm talking about, where it's achieving normalcy, where it's, you know, when John Fassa would come in here, you wouldn't automatically ask him, what's it like being a straight candidate?
Right.
And it's the converse of that.
It shouldn't be that way, but unfortunately, with a lot of people, it still is, and that becomes a topic. And, you know, for people like us, it's wait, are you implying that I'm gay?
I was hoping that was it and not that I'm old.
But yes, I am. Yes, I am. For those of you that know me that weren't sure, I am. Unfortunately, it's a good thing to talk about because a lot of people, they don't understand that we don't see it as a topic. We just live our lives. But then when, you know, the newsmakers love to, you know, focus on that little tidbit. And actually, when I was researching you today, I typed in Will Yandick and the first thing that comes up is Will Yandick's husband. So I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, I didn't get that.
Yeah, that's the first thing I typed in
website.
Will Yandick. And then it says
that.
Will Yandick's husband. I'm like, okay, I don't know why it's such a major point of conversation, but
I think it's part of, like you said, it's becoming more normal.
Yeah.
But it's also something that some people do like to focus on. But I think your answer is great in that, you know, and I actually experienced this as a woman candidate as well, not because of gay or straight, but because of female versus traditional male roles. And a big issue in my first campaign was my hair. And I said, you know,
why?
When... because it was too long. It's too this. You have to put it up. You it's have to perfect, do that. Holly. Thank you.
It always
well,
has
now
been.
I just said,
it always has
I
been.
Don't care what these people think. But, you know, I'm like, I'm wearing my hair the way I want to wear my hair. But I said, you know, do you ask male candidates to put their hair a certain way?
Right.
You know, no, stop. I leave my hair alone. Let's talk about what I'm going to run on for county clerk. So, you know, there is a little bit of that still, even in your talking. I think it's just part of the process, unfortunately. But I also think it's not a reason, you know, you're running because you want to serve your community and the district, not
yeah.
because of any.
And I think attitudes have changed so quickly on this issue. Mm-hmm. We yeah. might have had a very different conversation 10 years ago
sure.
about a real liability that might have been, and even in this district.
Right.
And I just think it isn't anymore. And I think that's a testament to the progress that we've made both nationally and here in this congressional district
absolutely.
In being a more diverse, tolerant yeah. Group of folks. And I know that applies across the spectrum. It's not a liberal conservative
sure.
gradient, but across all backgrounds. Something yeah. we should be proud of, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I saw you at the vigil that we had here in Hudson for the 49 people who were killed in Orlando. I was really happy to see you there. I did want to bring up in the news today, GOP Senator Susan Collins is gaining traction, and a handful of Republicans have expressed their support for the proposal in which, you know, both sides are going to be, it seems like it's getting to the point where they might agree on a little bit of gun control, and where it comes down to additional screening at airports
mm-hmm.
And banning people from purchasing guns if they end up on the no-fly list or the selectee list.
Right.
I was wondering where your stance is on the gun control issue.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just to remind your listeners, I did grow up on a farm where guns are commonplace and unemotional items like a rake or a shovel.
Right.
I am a gun owner myself. Mm-hmm. I come from a culture of gun owners. My grandfather was the president of my local gun club, and I often joke to audiences I'm probably the only Princeton grad that got a 12-gauge shotgun as a graduation present.
it's a great gift.
Yeah, it's a great gift.
Why? But I just want to know why.
To hunt.
I want a car or something.
But despite,
or a boyfriend.
Despite all of those things, I do think that we have a gun violence problem in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. And I think it's sensible to have federal background checks that are universal. But we also have to make sure that that isn't an unfunded mandate, that we have to provide the resources President Obama suggested, $20 million, to provide for state and local sources to put data into that background check system. Because the background check system is only as good as the data that goes into it. It has to be timely, has to be updated. And we have to provide those resources for local and state agencies to do that. That's something that I would support at a federal level and think there are the votes to be able to get that done. I certainly also support individuals that are on the terror or no-fly list not having access to weapons, would support nationally closing gun show loopholes, and I oppose reciprocal concealed carry permits, which I think are a race to the bottom. And let me explain. Here in New York, we have a fairly rigorous process that you have to go through in order to have a concealed carry license permit. Not every state in the union has that rigorous process. And this bill would require reciprocal carried privileges no matter what state you come from, which would mean that the new federal standard is the lowest possible standard. So because of those reasons, I would oppose that reciprocal concealed carry law. And I think those are common sense gun safety pieces of legislation that would keep Americans safer and don't jeopardize our core Second Amendment rights, which I support.
And is there a blanket statement that you would say to people that always refer to the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms? Is there something that you of everyone that, you know, feels the same way we do, that there should be a little bit more gun control or gun regulation? The people that respond, well, it's my right. Is there something that you could say that would get through to these people to understand where you're coming from and where the rest of people that feel like me and you and maybe Holly feel on this topic? Because it seems like sometimes they just go right back to, no, that's my right, and that's it.
Yeah, I think the conversation about gun safety is often one focused on rights, but we have to talk to it as a public health crisis, too. And we hear about these horrible cases of Orlando and see the horrible images on TV that frame the debate. But what we don't see are the millions of other Americans who, maybe it's a 5 or 6-year-old child that is just doing what a child does, is curious and gets into their parents' handgun and accidentally shoots themselves. We don't tell the story about the veteran that's suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and thoughts of suicide, that doesn't have the help to get, you know, through the VA hospital, 24-hour mental health crisis help to be able to, you know, not have a horrible outcome of that. I think we tell those common stories. I think I tell my story, right, which is that I am a gun owner. And I don't want to pass anything as your representative that's going to infringe on the Second Amendment rights that I myself enjoy. But that doesn't mean that there aren't a few common sense steps that we can take in this country. Is it going to eliminate gun violence completely? No. But if it moves us in an incremental direction towards safety, then it's something worth doing if it doesn't infringe on those core Second Amendment rights. And I think that certainly applies to background checks, providing safety locks for our law enforcement officials locally to hand out, making sure folks that are on the terror watch list not have access to firearms.
Well said.
Very good. When you talked about the reciprocal carry, was that the, like you're referring to the Utah permit?
Yeah, this is a, there are several versions of this bill being debated. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure which exact versions are on the floor right now, but the concepts are all the same, which is that an individual, you know, it should operate like a driver's license. If I get a driver's license in Utah, then I should be able to drive in any 50 states and have that recognized.
Right.
I would support that reciprocal system if the standard was something as rigorous as we have here in New York. And that standard was in place before the New York State Safe Act. New York has always had a fairly rigorous concealed carry permit system.
Yes, we have.
So if that were the standard nationally, then I could support reciprocal. But current bills would be, I think, a race to the bottom to those states that have the least rigorous standards.
Okay. Well, thank you for clarifying that and mm-hmm. pointing out, yeah, New York is very rigorous in with its pistol permit system. I know because I run the program in Columbia County. So
sure do.
Trust me, it's quite intense. And, you know, it's not a bad thing. But I think part of the issue, too, Justin, is that it's not really law-abiding citizens that we're worried about. What's his name? And I'm not going to say his name because we don't want to promote it. But he's not a law-abiding citizen. He's not going to follow the rules because he's criminal. So, you know, that's one of the areas, too, where I think people have a problem with is, you know, Will, you own a gun and you're a law-abiding citizen. But if you were intending to, if someone's intending to break the law, they're not going to say, you know, oh, wait, I can only, you know, oh, I can't have that gun or I can't do this or, you know, because they're criminals. I mean, he was going to do what he was going to do. It's unfortunate and it's tragic. And hopefully we can move towards some way of preventing this. And I think we need to focus more on, you know, the fact that he was doing this for ISIS and, you know, he felt he's a radical terrorist.
Well, and he started claiming that he was doing it for ISIS, but that wasn't really founded. You know, it was an unfounded statement. He was was claiming allegiance.
Right.
And they weren't, you know,
that's what he said. We should not talk about that.
Yeah.
We're going to argue.
True. Because, bring it on, Holly.
He did well, and I will. He said he was a terrorist. And to me, he was a citizen.
Yeah.
But he talked about the fact that America was bombing his country. No, your country is America, honey. You're a citizen.
Right.
To me, that's treasonous. You killed American citizens in the name of, I don't care if he meant it
or
whether, not.
Whether he had a ties or spoke to ISIS or not, it doesn't matter.
He
claimed allegiance.
Okay, I'm going
to
do this. It wasn't. He said he was doing it for that reason. Guess what? And I'm curious to know what they did with his body. Did they give it to family? I think they should have hung it in public, made a public spectacle of it.
Maybe that'll be on our next show.
Yeah.
We'll do some
know.
an expose.
It's horrifying. Live from the... He deserves nothing, not even to be stuck in the ground.
No, he does not. I agree with that. And we should tell people, this is a horrible segue, but the primary in which to vote is June 28th from 9 till
noon till 9,
I should say. And do you mind if we tell the listeners who your opponent is?
Sure, go ahead.
I don't know her name.
Zephyr Teachout.
Zephyr Teachout. Correct.
You have to have equal time.
I have it right here. Now,
I believe she's been asked, but she has not been on this show.
She has
any
not.
Show on the station. So
she's run for governor in a 2014 primary against Cuomo.
Right.
And but you're not concerned. You know, you think that people might just start voting for her because of her name recognition, but you don't think that. I mean, that's a possibility, but you don't think that you're hoping that people just look at the two candidates and choose the better one.
Yeah, sure. Look, I mean, you run for governor in the state of New York, you get your name recognition up, right? So mm-hmm. we didn't start at the same place. The folks in the western part of the district were probably not aware of who Will Yandick was in January.
Well, the class of 1994 from Hudson High School certainly knows your name. So that's all that matters.
But, you know, we've been working very hard over the last 5 months getting around this big district, had a very successful outreach and communication program, and our staff's working around the clock. So we find that as we get around the district and people learn who we are, hear our story and our ideas for this district, they will get on board. And so clearly Zephyr has some name recognition that she can bank on from her previous run, but we've been working hard to get our name up too, and we feel it's going to be a real race.
And you two have been quite friendly. Did you know each other before this race? You didn't.
I did not. I did not know Zephyr before running in this race. I think one of the reasons that it's a little more cordial on our side than among Heaney and Fasu is that we do agree on many, many issues of policy. And so our argument is really that we have the ability to win and keep this seat in November because of our roots, because we've been working on local issues here, because we have a geographic base. And it's one thing to win in a year like this where Democratic turnout tends to be high in presidential elections. It's going to be much harder for a Democrat to keep the seat without support from the independents and Republicans who live in this district. So if you look at this congressional seat, we're really one of only a handful of the 435 House races in the entire nation that are really close elections. The number of Democrats and Republicans are almost perfectly balanced in this district, and there is a large group of independents that are up for grabs. So even though Zephyr has some name recognition, she ran in a closed primary where 18,000 people turned out in her run against governor and did fairly well up here. She has not demonstrated the ability yet to win Democrats or win Republicans and independents, and that's something that I've been doing here in Livingston.
Right. Well, let's face it, too, that governor, the gubernatorial primary was a different horse race than this congressional district because, of course, the governor is for the whole state. And she did do well upstate for various reasons. But again, it's a different horse race when you're talking about this congressional district. And, you know, that's a little bit more focused, a little bit more, like you say, it should be about locals. I mean, we know that she really hasn't been here in the district. She didn't grow up in the district. And I think these are points that you're trying to, you know, it's just like this radio station. It's live. It's local. You're here. You were right down the road. You drove up to be here today. Mm-hmm. So I think that's it. Hopefully that message is resonating with your now talk about, you know, how has it been? Are you able fundraising? I know Zephyr has a big bankroll behind her.
Yes. Zephyr does have some impressive fundraising abilities through email and her email list. We've done well here, too.
Yeah.
I'll brag that we outraised John Faso and Andrew Heaney in our first quarter.
Congratulations.
Hi, John Faso.
We're a little bit further behind. And we'll have the resources to compete in this primary. Now, if Zephyr were going to make a decision to spend a lot of money on television, that might be a problem for us because that would be an advantage for her.
Right.
But I don't believe the Democrats are going to be spending any television ads in this race. And so it's a fair fight.
Oh, well, that's good.
I believe
we
have the resources to compete.
That's good.
Do you think Democrats are nicer than Republicans?
Ooh, that's a good question. It depends on the Democrats. I've seen some New York City races that are rough. There's a bloodbath going on down there to replace Charlie Rangel and Steve Israel's seats with, like, what is it, Tony, 5 or 6 candidates per race? I'm talking to my campaign manager in the corner here.
Oh, okay. Boy.
It depends on the race. Depends on the candidates. We've made a decision to tell our story, our vision for upstate New York, why we want to create an economy that works for young people here, to try to retain young people here, to find the federal role to work on local issues here and to work on the issues that are bigger than New York 19 that address income inequality and the environment and standing up for the middle class. That's our story. We feel that we benefit by telling that story rather than tearing the other candidate down. That was a decision that we made as a campaign.
That's good.
Yeah, when we had John Faso here, I asked him this question. I'll ask you the same thing. What would you say to someone, now you're a Democrat, what would you say to a Republican in trying to convince them to vote outside of their own party and maybe consider you?
Yeah, you know, look at what's happening this cycle. There's a great populist awakening that we're seeing on the left, the kind of Bernie Sanders movement. We're seeing it on the right, too, with the disaffected voters, the Trump phenomenon that nobody predicted six months to a year ago.
Sure.
And I think there is a common ground among the voters of this district, depending on their registration, that they feel that government does not work for ordinary citizens anymore. They feel that we live in a dollar democracy where the more dollars you have, the more access to democracy that you have. And so we've had 25 years of trade policies that even Chris Gibson has been critical of that have been hastening jobs overseas to the lowest denominator to other nations that have environmental and labor standards that we don't have here in this country that we're competing against. And I think if you can tap into that understanding that I come from this district, I've got skin in this game. I grew up here. I was educated here. I've chosen to raise my family here, that I'm in it for the right reasons. This isn't a stepping stone in some political career move for me. This was the moment where I felt that I was the right candidate for the right time to stand up and serve my community. And I think that story resonates beyond the talking points of your base party.
Which actually is true in the Republican primary as well, between John and Andrew. Same kind of similarities, if you will, you know, between a local versus someone who maybe decided to jump in for whatever reasons. We are midway through, but because of the technical difficulties we experienced earlier, you're not going to take a musical break. We're going to keep right on through. We have more questions for Will, but we will just say again, we hope you're listening to us online at www.wgxc.org. And if you want to hear us again on the airwaves on 90.7 FM, please, please, please take part in our Spring Pledge Drive. Call 518-697-7400 or go online, www.wgxc.org, to the, does it say pledge or drive or what does it say, Justin? Donate?
Donate. WGXC.org /donate.
Please consider making a donation today so that you can continue to hear the wonderful local radio that you've been hearing all these number of years. And, you know, people like Will and John coming on and some of our other wonderful guests and the other programming.
And we should say the goal for this specific pledge drive was $20,000, and we're still $10,000 shy. So
hopefully that's narrowed a little bit since yesterday. But
I mean, I know there's some of you out there that have $10,000 in your back pocket. I've hung out with you.
Yeah, hit them
last
up,
night.
Justin.
Last night. I'm just kidding. No, I was hosting trivia last night.
$10,000.
No $10,000 there, let me tell you.
Joe, maybe.
Not even $75.
Anyway, back to Will. We appreciate you being here, Will. What else? I know, let's talk broadband for a little bit. Where's your stance on what's going on with broadband? And I know that's a complex, really difficult issue because there's private players involved, there's public entities, but everybody wants it. And
this is a core business issue for our district. When we talk about creating jobs for young people and their ability to keep young people in New York 19, this is the 21st century utility challenge that we face. And I know we hear politicians of all stripes and levels keep talking about it, but we keep talking about it because we're failing at it. And it's going to take effort at the local, state, and federal level. Here locally, we've seen the Board of Supervisors just create a new subcommittee to deal with the issue.
Correct.
We have other groups like Columbia Connect, which are trying to leverage their grassroots power to make providers get the best deal. Mm-hmm. At the state level, we've seen the governor commit several $1 million to invest in this infrastructure. But the thing that I want to focus on as a federal candidate is really how we define and regulate internet service. I really believe in my core sense that we need to regulate internet service as a core utility. And the same way that we regulate electricity, the same way that we regulate public phone landline services. And until we do that, until we regulate broadband through the FCC as a public utility, there are several things that won't happen. We won't have the ability to force internet service providers to lease their networks to other providers that provides the kind of competition that brings prices down.
Right.
We don't have the kind of independent service quality assessment that we see like through state services, the Public Service Commission. And finally, without regulating internet as a core utility at the federal level, then providers won't have to contribute to something called the Universal Service Fund, which is the way that we're going to get bills in places like New York City to pay a few dollars on their bills to subsidize the rural development that we need here. That's the exact same way that FDR got electricity to rural areas in America, right here in Columbia County in the 1930s. And that's what we have to do today.
Very good.
Well, one of my I'm looking at your key points, key issues.
Better Vern.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
We can
hear me now.
Thank you to Vern Cross, who
Vern,
does the Drive Time radio show. He was telling us that our mics, my mic is never low. You could hear me anywhere. You could hear me at CVS right now. But the mics were a little low, so we just adjusted that. So let us know if it's too loud now. So the Common Core is a big issue, and you are supporting a parental opt-out for the Common Core. But why not just eliminate Common Core? Is there any way to eliminate the whole thing without just opting out?
Yeah, why not?
Well, we've got to have some federal standard to compare the quality of education across the country. It's not fair to students in rural parts of the American South, if we don't understand how they're competing relative to other students in this country. So we've got to have some federal standard. My issue with Common Core is that the rollout heavily favors high-stakes testing. And when I talk to teachers in my home district here in Hudson City Schools, when I talk to them throughout this congressional district, they describe a system where all they're doing is teaching for the test.
Right.
And so we've got to have a system where teachers are part of the evaluation process. And there's going to be some standardized testing. All three of us sitting around this table remember taking our little number two pencils right. and our Scantrons.
Mm-hmm.
That's always going to be some part of it, but can't be the only way to evaluate education. And you can't have teacher salaries and performance solely linked to those results. So it's more of like we've got to repeal and replace it rather than scrap it. We've got to come up with a new system and have teachers part of that conversation to evaluate a federal standard for education.
Okay. Do you think sometimes, I'm sorry, honey, I was going to ask, you know, there's sometimes this, I'm just going to ask you, do you think there's sometimes too much government intervention in local business? Like, how can the federal government tell Hudson, you know, that teacher sucks, but this one's good based on a test, like you said, because there's so many variables in education where, you know, you might learn differently than you. So it rounds the whole thing. You know, isn't this better left to the states and to the local entities to figure out, you know, how about hiring, you know, the best teacher for the job and paying them well and, you know, doing something more on the local level as opposed to imposing these federal mandates to say, you must do this.
Yeah,
answer to that?
I actually agree with you on that one. I think that we have had a long tradition in the United States of having local control in education, and that has served this nation fairly well over our history. I think the federal government has a role to define very broad strokes as to what acceptable levels of core education are, what relative proportions of science and math and reading standards. But it's really up to states and even local school districts to understand the best way to achieve that, because every student learns differently and every community has a different proportion of students.
Sure.
And that's what we pay teachers for. We don't pay them enough, but that's what we pay teachers to do, to find out the strategies that work best. When I say we should have federal standards, I don't believe that should be a very heavy-handed prescription, cookie cutter, one size fits all.
Which Common Core seems to be.
Right. Exactly. The implementation of Common Core has been a disaster largely.
Yeah.
It's the math part of it specifically is what I think of when people think Common Core, they go right to the math.
The ELA's crap as well. But
you know, and
there's been more examples of the math because it's like this convoluted equation.
Because nobody can count back change at the store anymore. That's why there's more focus on math when it comes to Common Core.
Yeah, but the way they're teaching it is horrible. And, you know,
it is because they don't understand it.
Oh my god, a phone call. Someone's donating.
Because the teachers weren't taught the common core approach to math, and we were not taught. So now you find that parents are struggling to make sense of helping their kids
sixth
at home
when
they don't know how to
about it.
They don't know how to, and they're resorting back to the way they learned in trying to teach them. Oh no, 10 minus 8 is 2. So just put that there, and then they get the answer wrong.
Right?
You know,
they
so
didn't
it's like,
do it the right way.
What do you mean 10 minus 8 isn't 2? So it's like.
True.
I don't. I just think, you know, I understand the reasoning for Common Core, but I don't think it's feasible. I just don't. I don't know. Am I wrong, Will Yandick?
No, I think you're right. I think there are major problems with the rollout of Common Core, and I think we've got to replace it with a new system.
Yeah. Okay. So what else, what separates you from Zephyr? What are the main key points? What are the differences? If our listeners are saying, okay, well, Zephyr seems cool and he seems great, and what's the difference? What's the main difference that people need to put in their minds when they're voting in the primary?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have held elective office, albeit in a small town, and my opponent has not.
Mm-hmm.
I have won elections in an area that's frankly tough for Democrats and have a record of working with Republicans to get things done. I mean, let's take an issue. We're both anti-fracking because we don't believe that it will create good jobs in this community. We both believe we need to be moving away from a fossil fuel economy towards a clean energy economy. But when Zephyr talks about banning fracking, she's talking to friendly audiences of fractivists. With a megaphone.
Fractivists, I like that.
Yeah.
Did you just
no,
coin that?
I did not.
Oh, it's out there already.
It's out there.
Well, that was fracking cool. I just coined that.
Nice. That was a good coin.
Carry on, Will Yandick.
Well, sure. It's one thing to talk to the converted about an issue that everybody agrees with, but in the town of Livingston, I've had to talk to members of my Republican board and members of my community who don't even necessarily believe in climate change, and then we've got a ban on fracking in our town. Zephyr talks a lot about corruption. In fact, she wrote a book about it. But I have been taking on corruption with the Public Service Commission when they sought to take 153 miles of people's land through eminent domain through the heart of this congressional district.
I was going
to
bring that up.
To build power lines that frankly would have offered no better service and would have asked you, you and me, the ratepayer, to shell out $1.3 billion.
You actually wrote a very well-written, excellent piece on that. And it was, I'll point this out, that it, you know, it, this was Governor Cuomo's plan.
That's
and
right.
You came out against it, which I thought raised it, elevated you a little bit, because you don't seem to be the, you know, follow along cookie cutter. Okay, this is what the boss says we have to do. You're, you know, you stood up for the people in your town and in this, that whole corridor, that and that was that was very good, very well done.
I appreciate that. And, yeah, we're working, it's working, we're getting a better deal. We haven't killed the project yet, but we're getting a much better deal for the ratepayers. It looks like the eminent domain clauses are removed from that project. And you're right, Holly, I've never been afraid to stand up to members of my own party or disagree with my members of my own party on matters of principle. I think those local issues, the ability to work with Republicans, the context that I have here, and understanding the issues here are what sets me apart from Zephyr. Although we agree on many issues of national policy, I get the sense that Zephyr's stump speech could be made in any congressional district anywhere in the United States of America.
Interesting.
And, you know, when it comes to winning those votes beyond the base of your party, I think that's where I have a leg up.
Well, there goes that that friendly vibe that you had between each other. I think that it's going to go downhill from here. Good job, Holly.
She's very nice. No, hey, that's
kidding.
What happens
well,
in politics.
Yeah,
you have
talk.
To
you
differentiate
say,
yourself.
You got to say what you're about.
Yeah.
So
he's not here to make friends. He's here to win.
That's right. You support Planned Parenthood. We'll go to another issue. And you want to protect the funding for life-saving health services they perform. You want to elaborate a little bit on your stance there?
Sure. I mean, we hear so many controversial and misinformed statements about Planned Parenthood. Let me give you an anecdote about why I'm an advocate for Planned Parenthood as a man. You know, I was talking to a young woman in the town of Olive. That's out in Ulster County, west of Kingston. And she came up to me afterwards at a meet and greet of about 30 people, and she shook my hands and said, "Thank you for standing up for Planned Parenthood, because if it wasn't for that organization, I wouldn't be standing here, because I walked into a clinic for something very routine, and I walked out with the shock of my life. I had absolutely no symptoms, and through their testing, they gave me the bad news that I had stage 3 ovarian cancer."
Oh, wow.
I mean, that is the kind of excellent healthcare, low-cost healthcare work that Planned Parenthood and, frankly, other Title IX agencies that work like Planned Parenthood are doing right here in this rural district, and why it deserves our support. And the family planning services that they offer for not only women but men as well are beneficial to our community and is something that's a good value for us to support as taxpayers.
Well, that's you bring in a good point about health care and health insurance. Where do you stand on? Do you think that the United States had a health care crisis, or was it a health insurance issue? And do you think that Obamacare is, where do you feel that fits in? Because that's big in the news, too. Is it working? Is it not working? Where do you stand on that?
We have
the Health Care Reform Act, I guess I should
call it. Before Obamacare, we had a crisis in both sense. We had a crisis in the millions of Americans that were uninsured and having to deal with the rising cost of health care. The Affordable Care Act is not perfect. I'm particularly worried at the number of young people that are choosing to pay penalties rather than to sign up for coverage.
Mm.
I talk to families throughout this district that are worried about their deductible plan, that their deductibles have gone up, or a plan that they loved is no longer available.
Right.
But it has covered millions of Americans on insurance that have never been covered before. And that is a good thing. The Affordable Care Act is not done with controlling the cost of health care in this country. That's where it's not doing as well. And there are several things that we can do at the federal level to bring down healthcare costs, because that's what's really hurting people. When people talk about healthcare, it's not this abstract conversation about how we pay for insurance. It's my wallet is hurting because my prescription drug costs keep going up, or my copays are going up.
Right.
My deductibles are going up. So what can we do at the federal level? It's madness to me that we are not negotiating and using the leverage power of the federal government to get cheaper bulk prices for prescription drugs for Medicare and Medicaid. That's first. Number two, we should be moving away from what's called a fee-for-service model, where you go to the doctor every time and they submit a bill to the insurance and get paid every time for that, towards one that's based on the outcomes and value of that healthcare. And there are some innovators right in this district. There's an outfit called Crystal Run Healthcare. They're actually based in Orange County but serve many of the southern counties in this district.
Okay.
That's trying to do that. That's a new model run by physicians that tries to compensate its doctors based not on the amount of care that they give, but the quality of their outcomes. Because if we don't reduce the amount of care, the number of unnecessary tests, unnecessary procedures, if we don't work hard to reduce the prescription drug costs, which are increasing four to five times the rate of inflation, then it doesn't matter what healthcare system we have. Middle-class Americans are going to be struggling to pay their healthcare bills.
Absolutely. That's one area where I wish there would be a little bit more governmental intervention is the cost of prescription medications. When you see that one guy who, I can't think of his name, but he had that smarmy look on his face when he did testify before. Remember, he raised the cost like 400% on his pill.
Yeah,
he was like the most hated man in America, which is why we can't remember his name. But, you know, stuff like that shouldn't be going on. I agree with you there, Will. I also think, you know, like you said, there's it's good to hear that there's different methods for people reaching access to health care.
Yeah.
You know, if there's people trying to think of, doctors trying to think of new ways to get, because I think that's one of the other issues is doctors are so driven to see, you know, 100 patients in a day. Oh, okay, you got this, goodbye. You know, it's like zoom in and out and come back, this test, do that test.
And they end up seeing like four because you're waiting in the waiting room for an hour and a half.
Right, right. So yeah. Definitely needs to be something addressed.
Do you have anything specific geared towards the LGBTQ community? Anything specific? I know you're one person, you can't change everything, but, you know, as of right now, if you're married to the same sex, that person can't come in and see you in the hospital if something happens to you and things along that nature. Do you have anything as part of your campaign specifically geared towards helping the LGBTQ community?
Yeah, I think we want to make sure that marriage is not just a license, but the full recognized value of all the privileges that marriage includes.
Is Amen. That true? Amen. Yeah.
Certainly something that I support. I think the next forefront, also getting back to our conversation on education, anti-bullying resources is where I think the forefront is on this issue. Making sure that high schools have proper spaces that enhance that diversity and provide a safe learning environment for everybody, regardless of their orientation or background.
Do you think there's a certain age in which schools should be teaching children about LGBTQ topics and introducing them to that, you know, there are these people out here? I mean, I think we've gotten there, you know, in the media, much more so than when I was growing up. We didn't see anything like this, you know, on TV or anything, but it is more prevalent out in our society now. But I didn't know, is there a difference in actually introducing it and having children be taught things regarding our community in schools?
That's a good question. And I think also getting back to our larger conversation about education, about not having too many top-down directives, I think the best way to get that done, Justin, is for, you know, things like our LGBT centers here in the Hudson Valley to have those conversations with school boards and local districts to see how they best want to put that into their curriculum at the local level. Because I don't think that message is the same message nationwide. And we want to reach out to every community that we can in rural and urban areas to make sure that conversation happens. But the ultimate decision for that, I think, belongs to local actors.
And probably the parents. I'm going to throw that out there and say, you know, some of these things are, you know, maybe it needs to be addressed on a different level if parents aren't so involved. But that goes across the board on many levels. If you don't have parental involvement on this issue, chances are there's other things that are impacting that child as well. So I think that there needs to be more parent involvement in their child's lives. And that certainly is part of the discussion.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I don't know if you're going to. Yeah, across the country resonating well with, you know, the government's going to require some sort of class on.
There should be a class for stupid parents.
I agree with.
I think we should put that right in part of your campaign.
Parents
one of
and
the
pets,
hot,
there should be education.
How to raise children. You heard it here. You heard it here first, folks. Will Yandick
easy for you to
is
say.
Starting a class for dumb parents.
Oh, boy. Not parents. Putting words in my
it's
mouth.
It's not
true. I didn't say that.
He didn't say it,
Justin.
But I'm willing it on him.
Oh, boy.
I'm willing it on him. It'll make the world a better place.
He said he was only giving us half an hour, but he's been here almost the full hour. Will, is there any other?
We trap people.
We do. You're here. It's like
that's okay. Well, we're having too much fun.
We are. We are. We're glad you're here. What else do you want to tell the listeners? And this maybe is, you know, good. We'll send you the link, and you can send this to people in the far reaches of this congressional district if you so choose. What else do you want to tell the listeners?
Final parting shot is to just let people know that we'd have a primary next Tuesday. It's June 28th. It runs from noon till 9 at your normal regular polling location.
And now this is, it's only, again, you can't vote. I'm sorry, honey. It's a Republican primary with John Faso and the other guy, and a Democrat primary with Will Yandick and her. So that's where we stand with that. So noon to 9.
And if folks want to learn more about my policies that's a good we didn't cover in this wonderful broadcast, you can go to Will, W-I-L-L, the number 4, congress.com. Will4congress.com.
Right, can they call you at home?
They can call me at 518-312-1974.
It's a good question. If you win and you're successful and then we go on to the general, will you have a local office? Will you have a Columbia County office like Chris Gibson?
You can count on it.
John Faso already said he would. So.
I absolutely commit to a Columbia County office. You
can
bank on it.
That's fabulous. We like hearing that.
Before he actually leaves, should we ask him the silly questions that we ask the candidates for mayor?
Yes.
Oh, good. Silly question round. Hit me.
So here,
be careful.
You, Will Yandick, are now in the silly question round. What's your favorite movie?
My favorite movie? Wow. Geez, that's hard. There's so many. Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, okay.
That's such a tough movie to watch. Excellent movie, but so
I
hard
saw
to watch.
A different version of that. And I can't talk about it on the air.
No, you can't.
Never
What's
mind.
Your favorite color?
We're all blushing.
What's your favorite color?
I hate to be a cliche, but blue is my favorite color.
Blue is your favorite color. Very nice.
And what's your favorite song of all time?
Favorite song of all time. Oh, my gosh.
Or now.
Do you have a campaign? Does your campaign
have
a theme?
Do we have a campaign song, Tony?
John Faso has a campaign theme
song. The campaign
song.
Manager is shaking his head no. Campaign manager is fired.
I guess it's Purple Rain in honor of Prince.
Oh, very nice. That's nice.
Okay. If you could only bring 3 non-living items with you on a deserted island where you're going to be stuck for 3 months, what 3 items would you bring?
3 items on a deserted
island. No other people there, and you can't bring anything
living.
This
is like a reality show. They do this, you know. It's not 3 months, but
you could bring one of this, and one of this. What would you bring, knowing that you're going to be on this island by yourself for 3 months?
I'm going to give them time to think and talk.
A comfortable
about...
chair, right? A nice Barca lounger.
Okay.
A nice Barca lounger, a good book, and probably a bottle of wine. How's that?
You better make that last
have
for 3 months.
Ever watched Naked and Afraid? That
I
show
have.
For 21 days. Where
I hate when they blur the parts out. That's why I don't watch it.
That's funny.
When that happens, I turn it.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Do you have a TV show in your spare
downtime?
What do you watch on TV?
Guilty pleasure.
I don't watch a lot of TV. I got to be honest with you.
Do you have a TV?
We do have a TV. It's hardly ever on, and when it's on, it's usually for just the evening news.
Mm-hmm. Are you still running the farm?
Not so much running for Congress now, but my 3 older brothers are keeping the home fire burning.
And is it crops?
It's a fruit and vegetable operation.
Okay.
So we'll open the store Green Acres in another few weeks here
very
in July.
Nice.
And get
so that's nice. You obviously then will have the concerns of farmers. Chris Gibson was a marvelous advocate for farmers of this district, so I think you would have that. I'm not sure the other one knows, you know, which
absolutely.
End of a cow
we're
milk
reauthorizing
comes from.
The farm bill in 2017. Very it's a good, good opportunity to do things for the Northeast.
That's good.
Do you eat the animals you raise?
He doesn't
We have some chickens, and yes, we do eat them.
Oh,
see?
He did just say crops. He eats the animals he raises. It's vegetables. He absolutely
chickens.
Does. Chickens. That's good. I grew up on a dairy farm, so that's why farmers are important to me. What about veterans? Really quick.
It's
where
interesting.
You
she's
on
lactose
veterans?
Intolerant.
Yeah.
I know. I love my milk. I was a dairy princess. I love milk.
Veterans. I mean, it's a crime that we ask our nation's finest to make ultimate sacrifices and then don't take good care of them when they come home again with long waiting lists and waiting lines at the VA hospitals. There's a lot more we can do, and you can read more at will4congress.com on that issue.
Oh, and the freeway of love is playing. Apparently that means you're going to take it and zoom on out of here. Thanks, Will, so much for coming
Thank you very much, Will.
Appreciate
again,
it.
Again, you can go to www.will4congress.com to get all the information. If you want to donate to his campaign, support him anyway, or just brush up on everything he's about, you can go to that that website.
And look for this archive. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in on the internet today to hear this broadcast. It will be in the archives as well. We'll promote that on Facebook. And again, final push for this show for the spring fundraising drive. Please, please, please consider making a donation. Any dollar amount
yes.
is helpful.
Please do it.
518-697-7400 is the number to call. Or
you can go to www.wgxc.org/donate.
So happy to be here today. This was Holly Tanner with
and Justin Weaver.
Something to talk about. And we'll hear you next time. Hopefully we'll be back on the air.
Hopefully.
Thanks, Will, for coming in.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.